Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, we have a lot to talk about this week, a lot of things to catch up on, and a lot of things to prepare for as the week unfolds. First and foremost, I hope everybody has had a really nice week. I regret to inform you, as you might have noticed, that last week had to be a rerun, but I found it an appropriately chosen rerun, given the fact that I had the pleasure of being able to have a very nice dinner with our good and loyal friend and fan of the show, Moritz, along with the guest that was featured on the rerun, Mr. Ali Golafshan himself. Woo-hoo! Mm-hmm. So Ali is now, has won again the Bavarian Film Prize. And the way that they do that is really funny. It's the only award show I've ever heard of, again, coming from a purely American background here, and having just seen the Oscars, it reminds me again of why it feels a little strange, but maybe it's the right way to do it. I don't know. We'll get into all that, but the way that the Bavarian Film Prize works, and I don't know, maybe it's the same with the Bavarian TV Prize, but they don't do nominees, so it's not like... Okay, there's a few things I find very funny. One is they don't do nominees. So, you know, there's not like some celebrity or person of notable respect that comes out and says like, you know, this is going to be your, you know, your nominees for, let's say, best direction or best writing or, you know, best original story or best, you know, whatever, best picture or something. And then you see the selection of what has been chosen and a little discussion or whatever about why, and then having this person present the winner. This is the formula that I've always known growing up. The Bavarian Film Prize, as I've seen it, as I understand it, is a bit more... I don't know, concise, a bit more like in a, you know, in a non-offensive way, a very German way, it's very efficient, where like you are just being told who the winner is. Someone comes out, again, they have a lot of celebrities, you know, of course, in their own right, and they come out, and the first weird thing is that there's no nominees, so someone just comes out and says, here is your winner for best, you know, best director, best film, whatever. And they just give the award, and then there's a speech, and then that, you know, category is over, which sure saves time, but it's a little less showmanship. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's funny. It's funny to see it because, you know, your whole life, Emmys, Grammys, Tonys, Oscars, not that I've watched a lot of Tonys, but pretty much every single major award show is like the nominees are, you know, and it builds tension. It's, you know, it's show business, baby. And the other weird thing I've found about that, just to have this anecdotally off my mind, is that all of the people who won, so of course, you know, were chosen beforehand, and, well, that's every award show, but they're chosen beforehand, and they're all on stage. This was also the weird thing, like, they're all seated around the edge of the stage a bit like, a bit like the judges from like The Voice. They're not in some, you know, gaudy chair that swivels around. They're on like sofas or whatever, but they have to sit there on this sofa with, you know, other winners, and they just have to stay there. And so if they say like, you know, the winner for the best song is, you know, Mike Ehrmantraut. And then, you know, the person stands up from the sofa, goes up to the mic, gets their award from whomever is presenting, and then they give their speech. And the speech can be sometimes quite short or quite long. Again, that's internationally just the kind of the game, you know. But the difference being that with Oscars, they famously will play you off with music if you go too long. And at the Bavarian Film Prize, I didn't see that happen. Maybe they do it. Maybe they play you off. but I didn't see it happening. And sometimes, not with Ali, because he's a man of, you know, he's more of a show man and less of a tell man. But with some people, some speeches were kind of long. I think, if I remember correctly, I don't know who it was. I don't remember names. And it's also not fair because I don't understand exactly what they're saying in their speech, but because it's all in German. But the first person to win an award that night, it was like a 4 or 5 minute speech, which is a long time. And they were never played off. And it just felt like, ooh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, all right then. and I just felt funny, like, you know, it's such a prestigious honor and it's such a great accomplishment. And all that aside, if I could just rearrange a few things, if I could just put like all of the people, all of them who are not currently presenting and who are not currently walking up to accept their reward or award, if I could put all of them into the main audience, you know, what I like about the way the Oscars and the Emmys and the, you know, the Independent Spirit Awards and blah, 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 how all of these look, I really enjoy how they look because it's so presentational. You know, there's a big stage with, you know, usually one host who's very entertaining. Maybe they switch off between different hosts. I've seen award shows hosted like, you know, as a duo, like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey or John Mulaney and Nick Kroll. These work great if they're people who are known for doing great work together. Sometimes they play off each other very well. And of course you have, you know, famous solo hosts, Chris Rock, Jimmy Kimmel, so on, Billy Crystal. But I like this presentational thing. Sometimes there's skits and, you know, little mockeries of the nominees. But the thing is, what's also interesting about it, and then I'll leave it alone because this is going on quite a bit like a speech would feel. There is like when you watch an award show in the States, you everyone has, for the most part, seen all the films. I mean, even if you haven't seen all of them have been released. So if you think about, and we're going to get into the Oscars, but if you think about all the Best Picture noms for the Oscars this year, right? American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, Zone of Interest. Don't worry, that's not memorized. I'm reading off my ballot list. But of those 10, they've all been released in whatever capacity. You know, some of them are smaller films. Anatomy of a Fall is a smaller film. Maestro was just on Netflix. I mean, just on Netflix, but, you know, straight to streaming. I think it also did theaters, but anyway. Past Lives was a smaller budget film, but did very well. Zone of Interest. Yeah, Zone of Interest, also international film, you know, English writer-director, but it's a film all in German. So, you know, you have some interesting selections there. But the point being that they've all been released, so that if someone who isn't in the media, if it's just a normal fella like your boy here, and I have the time and I have the accessibility to watch these movies, of all of these, American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Holdovers, Killers, Maestro, Oppenheimer, the only one I didn't see was Maestro. And I kind of regret that because usually, at least from the past, I don't know, 10 years or so, I've seen all the Best Picture nominees at least. You know, maybe I don't see all the, you know, all the things up for Best International Feature, Documentary Feature, Shorts, which I should. But still, you know, it's like you get older, your life gets busier. The Best Pictures, watching 10 films, especially ones that release just a couple months before the Oscars, is, you know, it's sometimes you have to make an effort to go out and do it. And this year, for sure, this year, really, like a lot of people, I saw Barbenheimer in the summer, more or less, late summer, I guess. And then the last stretch of these movies, I mean, I saw American Fiction like 2 days before the Oscars, or the night before. I think it was the night before I watched American Fiction, which was great. One of my favorites. Anatomy was just, you know, I don't know, a couple of weeks before. Holdovers, yeah, it was last minute. Killers was when it went to when it went live on Apple TV Plus, Past Lives, Poor Things. Zone of Interest was also like, Zone of Interest was watched the night that the Oscars happened in America. So it was on Sunday we watched Zone of Interest, and then Monday we found out everything. So the point being, good thing this is a podcast, right? Where like you're choosing to listen to this and I don't have to feel so bad. The point being that usually everything is released and you know, given your time and circumstances, can watch all of them. You have your favorites, you know what's nominated, and you can go in sort of rooting like any other kind of voting system. You can go in and root and have your heart choice and have your smart choice as we've done here. Our friends, you know, we voted on certain things. This is what we think will win. This is what we wish would win if we could choose, you know, things like that. So the Bavarian Film Prize I found interesting because Moritz will correct me, but I'm pretty sure everything that won has not even been released. I mean, Ali won again, and his film's not out. It's out in the spring sometime. So that's crazy because they there's no nominees. There's no like, here's what the options were that we had on our table, and here's what we selected. It's just kind of like you. It's just so, I don't know. It feels almost like there's that little, you know, the value of the award is still as strong. Of course, there's nothing on that, but it's just the entertainment aspect. It's like it loses that little sparkle. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good comparison. Like something that hasn't been released. So no single audience member or a person watching from home has seen it. So they can't be like, oh, hell yeah. You know, like, I loved that. I'm so glad that person won. They deserved it so much. Or on the opposite spectrum, your classic Twitter feud of like, they never should have given this award to them, blah, blah, blah. It should have gone to this and that. Like, that is fun. You know, you're not, that's like one of my favorite things about cinema, just in general, like the movies, the talkies, is that you're not going to agree on every single thing with all your friends. And that's great. You shouldn't. If you did, something's wrong with the industry. Everything should be different enough and interesting enough that you have a lot of crossover, sure. But some things that you completely disagree on, like me with some of my friends, totally split black and white, night and day on Poor Things. I love Poor Things. I think it's incredible. I have no problem with some other friends saying like, this was too goofy, too silly, too weird, too dumb, too wild, not their thing. You know, totally opposite opinion. That's great. Hey, that's the movies, baby. Same. That's the same expectation I want friends to have when I tell them that I don't think Oppenheimer's that great. You know, like if a friend of mine says they hate, I don't know, if they don't like Barbie that much, or they don't like The Holdovers that much, they don't like Poor Things or Killers of the Flower Moon so much. Okay. That's your opinion. It didn't click with you. That's totally fine. When my opinion is that I don't think Oppenheimer's that great, I expect the same from them. Hey, you know, it affected me. I loved it, but I, you know, it didn't grab you. No problem. That's just not your movie. And that's the great thing about this entire world that, you know, I've been so obsessed with since I was like 14. It's just like the movies, you know? I don't really know how I started on this, except for the fact that Ali was the rerun of last week and I got to have dinner with him and he has won this prize again. And anyway, yes. So Ali's incredible. Congrats again to him on this. And I believe there's a few big announcements on the day of this release. Let me double check one of those just to be sure that I'm not speaking out of school here. But there is a pretty big award. Oh, tomorrow's a lot of things. Well, I guess now you've heard that I'm recording this the day before this releases, but usually I record it a bit more in advance, but I didn't have the chance to this week. So you get what you get. You get a day early, fresh ass sounding Jordan here. The day that this comes out. So, you know, if you listen to this later, in the week, that's totally fine. But the 14th is, as far as I remember correctly, the Crema Award or nominee announcement. Let me see. This is another, the Crema Prize. It's another very big, very important. Oh, sorry. In my phone wrote Crema with a K, but it's Grima with a G. Sorry. I knew that. The Grima Prize is one of the most prestigious German television awards. It is named after the first general director of Nordwestdeutscher Rundfunk, Adolf, hold your breath, Grimme. It has been referred to in Cinema Magazine as the German TV Oscar. So it is very big. It's the Emmys on German crack. It's very prestigious, very big award. And I'm quite sure that my buddy Moritz, who I keep talking about, is going to be, I mean, certainly nominated, if not winning, for his contributions to the beloved series, Pumuckl. So, I'm very, very much expecting that, and I very much hope that by the time that he listens to this, or by the time that you guys listen to this, that I don't sound like an idiot with my foot in my mouth. So I'm going to move past it now, because if anything is different from what I've predicted, then it's just not nice, you know? Then it's just not fun for anybody. But that's my prediction, and if anything else is the opposite truth, then they've lost touch. Then they've really lost touch. So that's going to be on them. They're on the wrong side of history, baby. Let's talk about the Oscars. So, speaking of all that movie crap. For those who are just joining us this week for the first time, I went to film school, so I'm kind of a loser. That's right. So, there's a reason why I'm so invested in this. Let's talk about it. So, with a few friends, we had a little bit of a wager going on which films or which departments would, which films and which categories would win what. I didn't do so well. I took a bit of a swing on a few things. I hoped that Oppenheimer wouldn't take home as much as it did. I kind of assumed that after a certain amount of wins, they would put a kind of max limit on some of the amount of trophies they can take home. Apparently, they don't do that. They swept the floor at this year's Oscars, and for me personally, I don't think they deserved everything. Okay, so let's go through the winners here. I only have like a handful of them. I don't have everything here because it's a long show. The Oscars is too long. So I have, is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, 20-ish awards here out of, I think in reality it's like closer to 40 or something. But international feature, let's be honest, guys, a lot of us didn't watch many of them. There's, I know Society of the Snow from Netflix, a Spanish film, and there's The Zone of Interest, which is a United Kingdom film. It's an English film, but it's all taking place in Nazi Germany, and it's all with German actors, and it's all in German. So for the history buffs out there, that's pretty good. I love that movie. I think it was very good. I'm trying to think of a way to describe it for people who have probably never watched a really European film. You know, it's very like, this is the kind of movie when they were like, what would you think of Europe as like a cinema landscape? Like, I'd probably show them something like this. And I love this movie. So it's not a negative thing. It's just like, this for me feels very, very European. And it feels German in the best way. Maybe not. Maybe that's why it's maybe that's why it's so good. It's really not German. It's really just with great German actors and a great German story. For those who don't know, and I'm not going to do this for every movie because we're 20 minutes in. Jesus. The Zone of Interest is a film that everybody should watch right now. It's a serious movie, and it'll make you feel things and think things that aren't necessarily very easy to think about, but it's good. It's good for the human race to be looking at things sometimes. Sometimes the mirror has a smudge on it, and you got to take a look at it. Zone of Interest is based on a very difficult and true story about a family of Germans who live, literally next door. Like, there is a wall with barbed wire, which is their fence, next door to Auschwitz. And this was true. This was a family. The husband was, you know, a Nazi concentration camp general, or whatever you want to call it. And similar to how they still move people around to different towns in, you know, certain houses next to a factory for whatever purpose. Like, military families get moved around to different base camps, kind of like this. Like, he was positioned there to work at this camp and was working at Auschwitz 1 or 2, I forgot which one. And but it's all, you know, basically same location. And this follows, you know, him and his wife as a couple and their kids. And it's fascinating. It's just really fascinating. And I don't want to go too far into it. I don't want to spoil too much. Just watch it. I had international feature up for Zone of Interest, and it also won. So that's one of my wins. Documentary feature, I didn't watch a single one of these docs, unfortunately. I guessed one, and a different one won. So another correct one, I guessed for original song. We had a song from Barbie, a song from Killers of the Flower Moon. There's two of them here I'm not sure about. Maybe one is from Maestro. No, that can't be right. I don't know. But one was What Was I Made for Barbie. And that was Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas. And I guessed it would win, and it did. Amazing song. Little overplayed at this point. I've heard it a gazillion times, but they performed it at the Oscars, and I think those two are very, very talented people. Phineas in particular, of course, it sounds pretentious to be like, yeah, but like, you know, the brother is really like blah, blah, blah. Billie Eilish is insanely talented, but Phineas has just this like genius brain, and them two together is just like unstoppable force. Original score. I guessed Oppenheimer, and Oppenheimer won. But I don't think this was the craziest competition. I think Killers of the Flower Moon had a really, really cool special soundtrack. I'm a little surprised that Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny was up for original score. It's almost like just a nod to probably what is going to be John Williams' last movie. He's so old. But Indiana Jones, I mean, it's already won before in the past. I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think John Williams has enough Oscars. I'm not so butthurt about him losing that. It's okay. I also thought the original score for American Fiction was very good. If you have Amazon Prime, go watch American Fiction. It's a great, great, grounded, interesting movie. Very, very, very well done. It's about an author who ends up getting kind of wrapped up in writing a story he doesn't want to write because he thinks it's going to sell. And to his dismay, it sells very well. And he gets wrapped up in all of that drama. It's very, very good. I loved it. Visual effects, blah, blah, blah. I guessed one. It won. Sound, I guessed Maestro and the Zone of I guessed Maestro for sound, and the Zone of Interest won. Makes a lot of sense. The Zone of Interest, the sound design is incredible. Makeup and hairstyle, I guessed Poor Things. No, sorry. Makeup and hairstyle, I thought, well, this will be the one thing that goes to Society of the Snow, because there was a lot of hype around this movie when it came out. I guess it came out in December or January. It was January, early January. There was a big hype about this, like, just before the Oscars, and I thought, okay, this will be the one thing they give it to them. Society of the Snow is based on a true story about these soccer players who brought their family on a flight and it crashed in the mountains, and very tragic, like Donner party style sort of tragedy, excuse me. And it went to Poor Things. I think that's a very fair win. Very cool makeup, very cool hairstyles. I think that was really good. Editing, I guessed Oppenheimer. It went to Oppenheimer. I think the editor, again, my guesses are not always what I want to. This is not my heart list. This is my smart list. I guessed Oppenheimer, and it won. but I don't know. I think the editor, I think the editing of Oppenheimer was like someone who took two or three extra Adderall. But again, this is one of my many issues with that movie. But I'll let it go, just like in the vein of Elsa from Frozen. Let it go, let it go. Cinematography. Now this one. Cinematography was tough. Killers of the Flower Moon and Poor Things have extremely, extremely engaging, fun, and really well-crafted cinematography. I personally, I guessed, and I also kind of wanted it to go to Killers of the Flower Moon. If you haven't watched Killers of the Flower Moon, my God, that is such a great movie. Scorsese still really has it, man. It's so good. And there are some shots in that film that are so well-crafted, so gorgeous, so well-lit, so well-blocked, so unbelievably artistic. It's just breathtaking. I still think cinematography should have gone to Killers. Oppenheimer was going to win enough anyway. Everyone knew it was going to sweep the main, you know, the main chamber awards. Everybody knew Killian was going to win. Everybody knew Nolan was going to win for either director or picture, probably both. You know, in the end, it was both. But since it's going to take everything, everyone kind of just like jerked off at the fact that Oppenheimer didn't use CGI for these effects. But I don't care. Like, I don't care what the technique is if I don't like the story. And again, I got to stuck yuck. I have to stop yucking on people's yums. Some people think it's just incredible, and that's what cinema is all about. Jordan, live by your own rules. I'm trying. Yeah, but you said it earlier, and now you're not playing nice. Okay, you're right. I'm sorry. I'll play nice. Anyway, I think it should have gone to Killers, and it didn't. It went to Blob and Blimer. costume design. I was really hoping costume design would go to Barbie. They paid a lot of attention to detail on a lot of things in that movie. And it went to Poor Things, which, you know, great. I think Poor Things also had great costume design. It surprised me a little bit, but whatever awards that movie wins, I'm happy. As a lot of people are for Oppenheimer, I understand. Production design. Production, again, I guessed Poor Things and it won. But I do think for production, I do think Barbie should have won that. I think the production for Barbie, the sets they built, everything was so detailed, so well researched. Again, people don't really give Barbie enough credit. It's, you know, it's a glamorous, fun comedy. It's really a great movie. But because it's fun and loose and bright, a lot of people don't think it's worth these nominations. I really, really think it's a good movie. Animated feature, I guessed one, and the guess won, The Boy and the Heron. Adapted screenplay, I guessed American Fiction, and thankfully it won. The director of that movie had a great speech where he said that Hollywood should invest more, less in, you know, $100 million movies and more in like $10 million movies, which he's absolutely right about that. This has been like one of the best, I mean, 2023 was the best year of cinema in, I don't know, 10 years. Like, what an incredible selection of movies. This is something I really agree with. For everybody who I've disagreed with about like what film earns what thing, the majority, like the thing that ends every conversation cordially is like, oh, but dude, what a year for movies. Unbelievable. And not even on this list is like, you know, Ari Aster, Sofia Coppola. There are like, I mean, Wes Anderson won an Oscar for a short film. Like, what? It's crazy. I think you should have gotten nominated for Asteroid City, but that's different. Anyway, original screenplay, I guessed Past Lives. And the original screenplay went to Anatomy of a Fall. You know what? Fair win. I guessed Past Lives. It went to Anatomy. Anatomy is a good movie. Best Supporting, very happy with this. Very, very happy with this. I guessed... I've heard this name pronounced many different ways. I should just look it up myself. When I look at it as a guy from the South, I would say Divine Joy Randolph. I've heard some people saying like Davine or Davine. I think, you know, I don't know. I've grew up in the South. I've heard a lot of, you know, African-American women who have these really beautiful names that are like sort of separated versions of words you might use in the English language. And I would say Divine, like, you know, one is to be divine. But maybe it's Davine, Joy Randolph. If you have not seen The Holdovers, the Paul Giamatti and Divine Joy Randolph film from extremely talented filmmaker Alexander Payne, run and see it. It's a classic, wonderful, perfectly executed, beautifully grounded, well-acted story. For mom out there, if dad hasn't seen it, he's wasting time. This is the thing he always talked about to us as a kid. He showed us Casablanca, and, you know, Humphrey Bogart is out there with Ingrid Bergman, and she's shedding a tear, and as the plane's about to leave at the end, he pauses the film and he says, this is real acting, that's real acting, there's no CGI there. And it stuck with me for some reason, and sometimes I do wonder about some things being legitimate or not, but obviously these people get to where they are for a reason. And The Holdovers is exactly the kind of movie my dad and I would just crush over. It's great. It's great. And it takes place in the 70s. So, yeah. Go watch The Holdovers, Dad. It's great. And Divine Joy Randolph is just captivating. Amazing. My favorite performance of the year in any movie. I mean, I love Poor Things, but her performance in The Holdovers is like revolutionary, and I'm so glad she won the SAG Award and she won the Oscar. She deserves it. She's incredible. Best Supporting, everybody knew there was no competition. It was never going to happen for anyone else. I can't believe they even nominated De Niro. He's great in Killers, but giving De Niro a Best Supporting at this point is kind of like giving John Williams a nomination for Indiana Jones. It's like, yeah, we've done this. Obviously, he's not going to get it. Downey, it was his year. It was his campaign. Everything was aiming towards him. Downey got it. Boom. Of course. Now, a little bit of a surprise, and we're almost done here. If you're not into movies, I'm so sorry, but we're almost done. Best Actress. I thought everything was campaigning towards Lily Gladstone. She won the SAG Award. You know, I know Sandra Hüller, the German lady from Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest, was nominated. Carey Mulligan, I didn't watch Maestro, so I can't say anything. Annette Bening, again, Annette Bening for Naiad. Fun movie, fine movie. Go to Netflix, watch Naiad for a nice, cozy film that's not going to mess you up. It's got some laughs. It's going to pull your heartstrings a little bit. It's based on a true story. Nobody dies. Everything's nice and sweet. So go watch Naiad for a nice evening. But, you know, it's not a film, particularly for my generation or anyone younger. And Annette Bening has won a lot of awards, as far as I think. And again, it's like giving De Niro Best Supporting or John Williams for Indiana Jones. Annette Bening, she's great, but, you know, that's not, you know, I've seen performances like hers in this. She's great and she's unique. It's nothing on her, but it's not like, anyway, whatever. Carey Mulligan, incredible. Sandra Hüller was great in her films. I think, but everything was kind of aiming towards Lily Gladstone, and it really seemed that everyone was a little surprised that it didn't go to her. But again, I'm a big supporter of Poor Things. It's a fun, I love weird movies, and this delivers, okay? And yeah, Emma Stone gets it for Poor Things. And you know what? Emma Stone deserves it. She's probably, Emma Stone, I think for me, is probably next to like Margot Robbie in terms of talent. I'm trying to think of anybody else right now. Like Anne Hathaway, or also, you know, Carey Mulligan. Just like earth-shatteringly, generationally defying talent. I think Emma Stone, say what you want about whatever movie she chooses to do, I think Emma Stone is absolutely one of the best living actors like in the world. Moving on, last finals. No doubt, no competition, no question at all whatsoever. Best actor was always going to be Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, and he got it. Best director, this was the only one, like, in my mind, my guess was that, okay, well, Nolan's going to either win picture or director, right? Oftentimes, they don't win both. And I thought, okay, well, they're going to give Nolan one of these for sure. I thought they're going to for sure give him director. So I guessed director, and they gave it to him, even though I would have liked, I don't know, Oppenheimer's year. But, you know, I'm a Yorgos Lanthimos fan. Maybe it's not his film for Poor Things. Maybe he deserved it more for The Favorite. The Favorite is his previous films. Amazing. Jonathan Glazer, his techniques with the zone of interest were so fascinating. The way, like, he would put, you know, like 12 cameras all around the house. Sometimes the actors said they didn't even know where the cameras were. And they would all run simultaneously. And he would just orchestrate the whole house of actors, like 20 people, a gardener, a maid, someone making lunch with their friends, cutting cake, one of the Nazi guys coming out of the camps with his partners to have a cigarette and drink a schnapps and clean his boots. Like, a bunch of people in a big house with a big garden, and he would put like 20 cameras like in the bushes, in the grass, in the corners, in the cabinets, and he told them all what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it and what beats to hit, and he just let the cameras run. And he was not there in the room. He was not there actively directing them. There was no like video village, you know, like right at the entrance of the gate. It was a very unique way of doing things. The actors talk highly about that process, and I think it really made the film more organic, and I think it made it feel very real. And I probably would have given Jonathan Glazer Best Director this year over Nolan. But again, it was Nolan's year. So that would have been, you know, my heart would have been Glazer, you know, at the very last minute, you know, of course. Scorsese, again, you know, it's like, he's not going to get it this year. It's, you know, it's a great movie. Killers is great, but it's not his year. And, yeah, I guess Nolan, he got it. Finally, we arrive at Best Picture. I wasn't very smart with this. I was so certain that they would give Nolan director that I guessed very stupidly for Best Picture. It was a very dumb choice. It was like hopeful thinking. Because I thought, well, he's going to get that director. Like, he's going to get that. But maybe, part of me was thinking, well, look, obviously Best Picture is not going to go to American Fiction or Anatomy or Barbie or Holdovers. Sadly, I think these are great movies. It's not going to go to them. Maestro, I think, I don't know, Bradley Cooper, I think he tried too hard this year. The campaign was off. His interviews were strange. Just something wasn't working there. Past Lives, I think, just wasn't going to get it, although that would have been a nice choice. Poor Things wasn't going to get it. I think Zone of Interest wasn't going to get it. So it's a lot, you know, if Zone of Interest wins International Feature, it's not going to win Best Picture as well. I don't know. I think Parasite did that, but I don't know. The point being, I was very certain in my heart that the Best Picture was between Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. I thought, okay, Oppenheimer swept. Like, it took so many awards, right? I think it was nominated for 13. At this point, it has like 6 or 7, whatever. Best Picture, okay, we got director. Nolan's got his award. He's happy. I thought, well, they didn't give Lily Gladstone the Oscar for Best Actress. They gave it to Emma. So probably if they give director to Nolan, along with the other 10,000 awards it got, Best Picture is probably going to go, again, this was hopeful thinking, kind of, I thought it was going to go to Killers of the Flower Moon because it didn't get song, it didn't get actress, but what Killers represents for the Native American community and what that story says about, you know, American cruelty and oil, like oil blood and what people are willing to do for greed and colonization and genocide. It was like such a perfectly accurate sort of like story of the time. What a wonderful thing to like learn from. And I thought, that's going to be Best Picture. Again, didn't go to him, went to Oppenheimer. So I got, out of these, I got 12 out of 20. And I had the least correct answers out of almost everybody, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think, yeah, my friend Julian got 15 out of 20. I had 12. And I don't know how many Ify got. I think it was also fine. You know what I mean? I think maybe she got 11. So she had like one less than me. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, whatever. But not for me the most like groundbreaking Oscars. But again, as most conversations are rounding, as most of the conversations about the Oscars end for people who don't agree on which film should have won what, the point being, what a great year for movies. Now, moving on, we have big news. If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, March 14th, well, boys and girls, I've got something to announce. So, if you follow me on social media, which if you don't, what are you doing with your life? No, I'm kidding. But let me just check something really quick. What a way to amp up an announcement. I have posted, if you follow me on social media, then you will have probably already seen by the time that you hear this, that I have announced my first leg of my tour. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. So this show comes out on Thursdays. So Thursday is the announcement of the tour to get everybody all jazzed and hyped. Now, I'm used to doing these things alone. I'm used to booking the shows alone, or just not getting shows booked, but booking things alone, right? My live show in January, I booked it myself, me directly with the promoter of the venue. I'm used to promoting it alone. I'm used to setting up the terms alone, and I'm used to announcing the link when things are ready on my own. Now, since January, things have escalated a little bit, as some of you know. Things are, doing well. You know, I think there's a long ladder yet to be climbed in terms of my goals and stuff, but I'm much better off in terms of the accessibility and support systems and stuff that I have in place now, thanks to the success of the videos. And since that live show, I had some press, this video piece that's still in the show notes if you want to watch it. It's free. And I think next week I should finally have this Süddeutsche Zeitung, this South Germany newspaper article coming out. It's been delayed a lot longer than I thought it would be, but it should come out pretty soon. So I've had some press, and the show was well received, and I've been working with a lot of good companies on advertisement. Basically, what I'm saying is, like, now that I've gotten to this next stage, I'm working with a booking agency for this tour. I don't know if I talked about it already on the show. It's not so important. Shout out to Jean, who is the manager of my friend Giovanni, and he's the one who got me not only in touch with the influencer agency that I work with now, Mac, but he also got me in touch with the booking agency that I am currently working with for this tour. That's what I tried to say. So the booking agency is Carsten Janke. Can't get more German sounding than that. Carsten Janke. Concert Direction presents Jordan Prince live on tour. We have three shows. It's just the first leg. If you're listening to this from Stuttgart, Dresden, Leipzig, Frankfurt, Cologne, relax. It's all good. We'll be coming to you. The thing is, we wanted to test the three strongest cities that are like my highest, data-based fan amount. It's a weird way to say it. You can tell on your data and your insights in your social media, you can see which cities have the highest traffic, what ages have the highest traffic, is it more men or women, that sort of stuff. You don't know who they are, where they live or whatever. If there's someone from, Canada living in Germany, or if it's a German person, you can just tell what city and what country. So we went with the highest three cities, which are, drum roll please. October 16th, I'm saying we because I'm so used to playing with a band. October 16th, I will be playing at the Kent Club in Hamburg. And the very next night, October 17th, I will be in Berlin, at the Franz Club. I don't know Kent Club or Franz Club, so it's very cool and exciting to be at new places. That's always very fun. And we left a little space there between the 17th and the next show, which will be in Munich at the Strom. which is where I saw Father John Misty. Pretty cool. That show will be October 20th. So we left a little space between October 17th and October 20th because we're hoping that the first venue in Berlin sells out. So then we can add potentially at least one more. So there you go. October 16th, Hamburg, Kent Club. October 17th, Berlin, France. FRANNZ for the normal people. And Munich at the Strom on October 20th. The day that this comes out is already the day to release the promo. My Instagram stories probably have it. And the thing is, don't freak out. The next day, if you're listening to this on Friday, for example, God, I hate doing like math of calendars. The Friday, the 15th, is the day that the pre-sale link goes online. So if you're hearing this the day it comes out on Thursday the 14th, we are announcing this tour publicly live. I don't know why. This is why I brought up that the fact that I do things alone. Man, I'm so scatterbrained. It's unbelievable. I brought up the fact that I'm used to doing these things alone because the booking agency does things differently. They want to announce the tour on a Thursday and then release the links for people to buy the tickets on Friday. I'm used to being like, yo, tour is up, go right now. And a lot of people, I think, tend to get kind of jazzed up about the idea of like, oh, I want to see him. Oh, I'm thinking of this right now. Oh, I'll just get the ticket right now. But, you know, I'm going to be posting about this like crazy. And if you are a fan from my social media channels who has joined into this artsy fartsy family, you know, Friday, the link is up and I'll try to remember to add it to the show notes for this podcast, but I do tend to forget things like that. But if you follow me on social media, you'll see it. It's going to be in my bio. Go ahead and get your pre-sale tickets early. One, the pre-sale tickets are cheaper, so you're saving some money and you're locking your spot at these venues. And two, and this is just a little gift for me, if these venues do well, for example, if we say we sell out all three, which is the wildest thing I have ever said out loud, if that happens, then we are setting up a much larger tour for the spring. We're going to hit these cities again with new material. We're going to hit Frankfurt, Cologne, Stuttgart, Leipzig, Dresden, many, many, many other towns, and spread our little wings around, maybe even get to go to Switzerland and Austria. It's my dream to be on a stage and to tour and to perform for wonderful people like you. So if these tickets go up, when these tickets go up and you want to support me and to be a part of this dream making process, then go click it now and reserve some tickets so that things look well for the booking agency so they get some feedback. I'll know exactly how many tickets are sold. As soon as they're sold, you know, we're announcing in March and the concert is in October. So I'm not so scared of, you know, it, you know, the whole thing selling out like in a couple of days. I remember we launched the January live show tickets in October of last year and the whole thing sold out in 2 hours. But these venues that we're booking for this tour are larger capacity. Now, I don't want to go out there and put my neck on the line and tell you exactly how big they are. People who live in these cities will know, but it's a little bigger. So it's a bit more of a gamble. So I'm putting a bit more of my sensitive little heart in your hands. So it's all up to you guys. So that tour is announced. Karsten Janke, Concert Direction, presents Jordan Prince live on tour. Hamburg, Kent Club, October 16th. Berlin, France, October 17th, and Munich, Strom, October 20th. Again, Thursday, this announcement comes out, and Friday, the link is up. So from Friday on, go ahead and get your tickets. Buy one for your parents, for your friends, for your invisible friends. You know, I think I may have to wrap it here. I had a few more things I wanted to get into. Like, I've been invited to be like a keynote speaker on a panel for like an immigration company. Oh, well, you know, there's two things. One thing, I can tell you two funny things. One is I was asked very last minute if I wanted to be the supporting act for, if I wanted to open up for Reggie Watts. Again, at the same venue that I'm playing in October, Strom in Munich. He's playing there like this weekend. And they asked if I wanted to do it. And it was like, you need a tight 15 minutes and it's for $100. And I already have plans Saturday. So I would have to cancel these plans. I would have to prep a tight 15 because I haven't been running my set, obviously, in a while. And I would have to, so it's like hours of prep, repetition, memorization, and canceling other plans for $100. Look, I love Reggie Watts. He's a genius. I've already seen him live a few years ago in Munich. I've got my fill. I love him. I respect him. It's just the situation. And so for the first time, like getting an offer like that last minute, I had no issue saying no, which is crazy. I've never felt that I could ever say no to something like that. And now I did. Also, same situation with the U.S. consulate in Munich. I talked about it with Mo, I think, a couple of weeks ago, but I was invited to do some stand-up at the U.S. consulate in Munich in September. And let's just say, look, I'm very flattered that they asked, and I hope that there's something we can work out in the future. But their budget was so far below what is like standard practice for things like this, that again, I had no issue respectfully declining the offer. I mean, cut to like 2 or more years ago, I wouldn't have thought twice. I'd be like, this is like the opportunity of a lifetime. But once you've had a couple opportunities of a lifetime, like, oh, selling out a venue in 2 hours and like being invited to the film festival in Berlin at this red carpet thing, you're like, oh, okay, I can say no to some things. That's all right. And it's not easy. Of course, I debated about it for, you know, as long as I could up until the last minute, basically. But it's like, you know, I can say no. So learn that you can say no. All right, everybody. Last and certainly not least, go check out on Spotify. The band is called Geese. G-E-E-S-E. And the song I would recommend to get into them is called Cowboy Nudes, like a nude photo. Cowboy Nudes, amazing, amazing song, amazing album. The next song after that on that same record is called I See Myself. It's a masterpiece. The band is incredible. They're young dudes from Brooklyn. They're blowing my mind. I can't stop listening to them. Go listen to Geese. And yeah, learn to say no. It's okay. Protect yourself. Thank you for listening. I hope the movie stuff didn't bore you too much. And yeah, the tour is out there, baby. Go be a part of the family. Go support this ride. I love you guys so much. And have a wonderful, gorgeous week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.